My name is Solis, and I am a grateful, recovering co-alcoholic and privileged to be a member of the Worldwide Fellowship of the Al-Anon Family Groups. I'll just clear up the confusion about the name right now. I have gone through a name change, and I'll get more into that later, but the new name is my former last name. And so if those of you who are confused about that, that's what's occurred. So before I even get started, let me thank the committee for everything that that they've done this weekend. Definitely thank you, William, and thank you, Rose, or anybody who had anything to do with me being here, especially, you know, thank you, Bryce, for being such a wonderful host, and everybody who works on this committee. I've been privileged to be a member of this committee in years past, and so I've done a lot of the service positions that are here, including chairing this conference, and it's so wonderful to come back and see that it's still going. You know, I came to the very first one, and to see it grow and change over the years and develop and remain a constant is a miracle. Not all cities experience that. I've been to some roundups around the country that no longer exist. So to come back here and see that it's still going strong is a testament to the commitment that the fellowship here has. So I introduced myself as a co-alcoholic, and the reason I did that is because back in 1984, when I came into the program of Al-Anon in Detroit, Michigan, that's how we introduced ourselves. It was a time before there was any such thing as CODA or the term codependent. Even the term ACOA wasn't coined yet. And so when we sat in meetings of Al-Anon, that's how we introduced ourselves. We said we're co-alcoholics. And the reason that we did that was because it really sort of conveyed who we were in terms of our relationship to the alcoholic. We were at a parallel with the alcoholic. We rode the roller coaster with the alcoholic. Our relationship was defined initially as our relationship to the alcoholic. So we were co-alcoholics. And then over the years, it sort of shortened to co and then codependent. And then sometimes we introduce ourselves in different ways. But I still introduce myself as a co-alcoholic. And I do that because I think it really aptly describes my relationship to the alcoholics even today. I am a visual person. I'm one of those people who really gets more out of a story if there's pictures associated with it. So I brought a slideshow presentation with me today. Yes, exactly. So the screen is like right here. So if you'll work with me here, I'm going to do my best to paint a vision for you of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. We'll start with the first slide. The very first slide is the Capitol Dome. Sacramento, California, it is where I was born and raised. It's a great place to be from. It's a great place to be in recovery. I will just show you right here. This is a picture of my family. You'll see in height order, I'm the oldest of five children in a Mexican Catholic family. The woman there with the beverage in her hand is my mother, the original alcoholic that brought me into the doors of Al-Anon. You need to know that since I've gotten here, I have plenty other alcoholics in my life. But that was the original reason that I came into Al-Anon. I love being from Sacramento. I eventually moved and spent my teen years in Fair Oaks and went to Del Campo High School. Go Cougars. Another great place to, you know, grow up and be from. And I moved away from here about 3 years ago. I now live in Texas, so I'm the Texan with the Sacramento accent, I guess. But it's a new adventure there and a new chapter in my recovery, and it's a wonderful place. My home group is the Lambda Live and Let Live group that meets on Mondays and Wednesdays. If you're ever in Austin, please come and visit us. I have a recovery date in Al-Anon. It's November 3rd, 1984. That's not the first date I went to a meeting, but that's the date that I surrendered. So I had spent some time in Al-Anon before then, but up until then, I wasn't serious about the program of Al-Anon until November 3rd. I have a sponsor, and I have sponsees, and I've worked the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And we talked about the concepts of service. And so if you don't hear anything, know that those are some of the things that are asked of us when we come into the program of Al-Anon in order to have a successful experience here in Al-Anon. So moving on to the next slide, we'll just fast forward to high school. Okay, so this is me in high school. This is a rigorously honest part. I'm going to tell you that I took advantage of Photoshop with this picture. I was not... I was not the Del Campo High School Class of 81 head cheerleader. But I so wanted to be. You know, I really, really aspired to be, you know, one of those cool people that, you know, everybody loved and, you know, admired and hung out with. And so it's time for really for me to show you the real slide. Okay, so those are my feet sticking out of that trash can. That's me being thrown into a locker. Me running from an angry crowd. This was my experience in high school. You know, I was, you know, if I had a sash, it would say, you know, Class of 81 Del Campo High School, class fag. That was me, the one that people picked on and made fun of, and I spent most of my time in high school really just trying to get from class to class without getting beat up, and I hated every day of it. I hated every day of it. The wonderful thing about Al-Anon is that, you know, we get to meet people who have similar experiences, and we have a bonding that occurs because we know each other on a level that sometimes people who are normies or outside the rooms don't get to know each other. So I know that many of you have similar experience, and we've been able to bond through that and know that we survived that and that we're here. And so I don't want anything I say up here to make it sound like I'm believing I'm some sort of victim, because I have come to understand what those experiences have meant to me and what they mean to me today, and it's an amazing thing. I wanted desperately to come out and get out of the house as soon as I came of age. So I think the week after I graduated from high school, I got my first car, and it wasn't very long after that I got my first job across town, and I moved out of the house. So this is a map of from Fair Oaks to downtown. That's how far I moved. I'll tell you that the disease of alcoholism is a progressive one. So my mother's drinking started out with just, you know, I'm going to be late coming home, and she would stop off at Rudy's Hideaway or one of the other local taverns and have a drink on the way home from work. And then it progressed, and she was coming home later and later. And I'll never forget the first time that she didn't come home at all. I woke up very scared, and I didn't know what was going on. And I remember my sister and my brothers waking up and saying, "Where's Mom?" And I said, "Well, you know, she had to get up early to go to work this morning, so she's gone already." And what I learned from that experience was that I had to learn how to lie. I had to learn how to lie very quickly and very convincingly so that other people would be okay. Whether I was okay or not really didn't matter, but so that other people would be okay. And that started a pattern of dishonesty that carried on for many years. And that was my experience, and it became a very difficult one to break. Through the course of working the steps in recovery, I have been able to do much better at that, but it's been a challenge. It's been a challenge along the way. So I moved out, I moved downtown, and I wanted to come out, so I went to my very first gay bar. This little establishment right down on J and 20th is a place called The Rec Room. And no longer there, next door to what is now Original Pete's. And it was my first Al-Anon hunting grounds. Oh my God, it was a great place to find alcoholics. And the reason that is because, you know, they were there. And I was going through a withdrawal without a better explanation. I was used to a really insane environment at home with lots of arguments and my stepfather yelling all the time and these things. And so I'd moved away from that, and I didn't have that anymore, and I missed it. Crazy as that sounds, it's what you're used to, you miss it. So I went down to the rec room and found me some. And which brings us to our first Al-Anon fact. Alcoholics are a great source of adrenaline. And I'll tell you up front, that is my drug of choice. Okay? Adrenaline is my co-alcoholic drug of choice. When I've got adrenaline flowing through my veins, I love you and I hate you at the same time. I want to be with you forever, and I hope you die in the next minute at the same time. Okay? I feel alive on a level I don't normally feel, and I want to feel that way all the time. And the only way to tap into that source that exists within myself on a chemical level is to get into relationship with alcoholics, because they are a great source of adrenaline and they keep it flowing all the time. So I was getting into these abusive, non-functioning relationships, and I thought I might have a problem. And then I thought about it and I realized what the problem was. Yes, back to the Capitol Dome. Sacramento was the problem. Yeah. I love that picture of the Capitol there with, you know, the U-Haul and the Schwarzeniggers and the hooked up to the Hummer. I needed to get away from here. Here was the problem. So I had no means of doing that. I had no education to speak of. I really didn't have a job. So I did what seemed like the most reasonable solution. That's me in a Navy outfit. I joined the military. This posed some problems. If you haven't gathered by the cheerleading picture, I'm somewhat effeminate. Little, not a lot. And so I'm in boot camp, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to survive this experience because it was not fun. And I discovered a three-syllable solution to boot camp. Color guard. I was in the color guard. So this is me marching up and down the field, waving a flag. This is me twirling a rifle like it is the last baton on earth. I got to be the cheerleader I always wanted to be in the Navy. And so the Navy took me to some great locations. This is Orlando, Florida. Detroit, Michigan, San Jose, California, you know, join the Navy, see the world. And so so eventually I did get stationed in Detroit, Michigan. What occurred there was I thought, because I was 2,400 miles away from the alcoholic, that this was going to solve my problem. Here's a map. Here's Sacramento. Detroit, Michigan, 2,400 miles away, quite a distance. What I discovered was that my problem wasn't going to be solved with a geographic solution. Ultimately, it was going to require a spiritual one, and I didn't know that. What occurred was my family was continuing to have problems. I talked about the disease of alcoholism being a progressive one. So by this time, my mother had, you know, retired or cashed in her retirement with the state from 30 years and invested in a bar. And so here it is, the Corkwood down on, you know, Eastern and Arden. And I don't know, there may be some alcoholics here today. Maybe you threw up there. I don't know. nice little neighborhood bar. You know, people drank there. And that was the family business. And my brothers were working there. Everybody was working there. It was what they did. So the insanity level kept rising. And I was 2,400 miles away, and I was worse off. Because when I lived downtown, I could often go home and fix things or rescue people or do the things that were asked of me as the oldest of five children. You'll notice in that very first picture that I showed you that my father was not in that picture, and that was because he left when I was at a very early age. And so so from the very beginning, I had been the caretaker and the one who managed things. And so being in Detroit, all that distance, I wasn't able to do that, and it was tearing me apart. I was depressed most of the time. I hadn't talked to you at all today about suicide, but from my very earliest recollections, probably when I was 12 years old, I'd been thinking about suicide, and so now those feelings intensified. And so they sent me to a Navy counselor who happened to be a double winner, and he indicated that what I was experiencing was co-alcoholism, and that I needed to go to meeting of Al-Anon. It wasn't put in the form of an order, but almost. So I ended up in my first meeting of Al-Anon. So it was in this church in Detroit, in this basement, with these embroidered slogans on the wall. I was not happy. I was like, no. This does not look like a fun place at all, you know? And I sat in the meeting, and, you know, at that particular time, the meeting was comprised mostly of older women, and already I was, you know, 19 years old, I think, at the time, thinking, I have absolutely nothing in common with these folks. I don't know what they're going to tell me, but I'll sit and I will listen. And the chairperson opened that meeting, and she said, my name is so-and-so. I'm a grateful recovering co-alcoholic, and by the grace of God and these 12 steps, I have not found it necessary to plan the homicide of another human being for 4.5 years. This picture is a strand of pearls, which I was not wearing that night, but had I been, I would have been forced to clutch them because I could not believe she just said that. I thought, my goodness, I am in the wrong place. You know, So I sat and I listened, and at the end of her story, she wound up with saying, and for all that, I'm grateful to be a recovering co-alcoholic, and they all clapped. And my reaction was akin to throwing water on a witch. I was like, what? Grateful? And where the hell was the solution? Like, how do we get them sober? That was why I went. I did not believe I had a problem, and that counselor never explained to me what co-alcoholism was. I thought what I needed was a solution on how to get the alcoholic sober. And I waited, and I sat through that meeting, and it never occurred. So I was getting ready to stand up and turn on my heel and not return. But, you know, they said, keep coming back. So I knew they needed me. I'm not a co-alcoholic, to not go where when it's needed. So I said, yes, of course, yes, I will be back. I came back the next night, and a couple of the ladies that had been at the meeting the night before walked up to me, and they said, you've made it back. We're so happy to see you. We would be so happy if you would be the chairman of the men and women Al-Anon meeting in Detroit, Michigan. And I was like, oh my God, this is such a privilege. Okay, what do I have to do? And they said, well, as chairman, before the meeting starts, you take the chairs from over there and you put them around the tables. And when the meeting's over, you take them from around the tables and you put them back over there. And I was introduced to service. Okay? The thing about service is that it will keep me connected. It will show me the way. It will get me involved on a level that just sitting in meetings will not do, okay? So that job became my job. That group became my group. That meeting met every night, seven nights a week. And I would go to those Al-Anon meetings, and I would do my chairs, and I would listen to the meetings. And I have to tell you that, you know, when I gave up that service commitment up at not 30, 60, 90 days, I don't even remember how long I had it, and the next person came along, I thought, you're doing it wrong, you know, because that was my job, you know, and I owned it, and I was a part of that group before I knew it. And so this was all before November 3rd, 1984. So I'm going to Al-Anon meetings. I'm not really doing the deal. I'm just going to meetings, basically. And we all, some of us anyways, know what that's like, just going to meetings and not really doing the deal. So I saw all the steps on the wall. Here they are. I call them the pool rules back then. I roll my eyes. I could not refer to the steps without rolling my eyes. And I had a sponsor. Maybe I'd call him. Maybe I wouldn't. After I gave up that service commitment, maybe I'd do something else. Maybe I wouldn't. And so as a result, not much changed. Not much changed. And so what happened in October of 84, though, was that my mother had a sort of a bottom with her drinking. She was experiencing the DTs, and she had sort of sequestered herself in her room and wasn't coming out. And my family called me and said that you have to come help because you're the only one she listens to or will hear, and so it's gotta be you. And so the Red Cross said, yes, you need to go home. And so the Navy sent me home. And because I hadn't had any recovery in the program of Al-Anon, I used what I knew, which was my methods of coercion. I tried the guilt, I tried the shame, I tried begging. We even got down to the bottom of the bag, which was, you know, making her a sole contestant on my favorite game show, Guess What I'm Mad About. And nothing worked. When I left, my family was upset with me because I hadn't accomplished what I set out to do. And I was on a plane going back to Detroit, and I got it. I really, for the first time, really got it, which is that I'm powerless over alcohol. My life has become unmanageable. The disease of alcoholism is a progressive one, and my disease of co-alcoholism had progressed to the point where it no longer worked. If you've ever sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and heard the alcoholics talk, they'll often talk about they got to a point in their drinking where it just no longer worked. They couldn't get drunk anymore. Just didn't do what it used to do. And that's what happened with me and my co-alcoholism. My little bag of coercion wasn't working anymore. And I didn't know what else to do. So I went back to Al-Anon. And I did use the word disease when referring to co-alcoholism. I know that Some people have a hard time with that word because of the medical connotation, but certainly we can agree that co-alcoholics are at dis-ease. I was certainly at dis-ease. And so I went back and I started working the steps on a level that I hadn't before. But it wasn't any easier, you know. I did the first step, and then we talked about insanity in the second step, and I conceded, you know, resigning from the debating society that, okay, maybe I'm insane, but they're more insane. I had to let go of that, and I would get to the third step, and I would balk because it had the G word in it, and I just wasn't ready for that. And I had a sponsor who would talk in soothing tones, but also soothing tones of bumper stickers and riddles, and I didn't get it, you know. And I would tell him, I'm having a hard time with God. And he would say, sweetie, it's because it hasn't occurred to you that God has had a hard time with you. Oh, thanks. Lots of answer there. So it was around this time that I was arrested. I was arrested and read my rights and charged by the Navy with homosexuality. This is the part where you gasp. Pretend to be surprised. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yes. Had I been wearing my pearls that day, I would have been forced to clutch them because I could not believe they just arrested me. And so the interrogation process consisted of, you know, raising my pant legs to show I didn't have shaved legs, and, you know, and then it made me finally disrobe to show that I wasn't wearing women's underwear, and, you know, thank God that day I wasn't, and, you know. I got legal representation, and my attorney said, you really need to take a lie detector test, and I thought, yes, that's exactly what I need, you know, because I'm thinking, do your best. Because, girl, I've been lying my whole life, and I'm pretty fucking good at it. Okay? What you gonna do? Bring it on. So I'm sitting in a room, and I'm waiting for them to hook me up to this machine. And my heart is racing on a level that it had never raced before. And I'm really frightened. Because it's occurring to me, this thing about the third step might be, if I turn my life and my will over to the care of God, my thoughts and my actions, as my sponsor used to say, maybe this lying thing is not going to work anymore. And I start the co-alcoholic chess game, which is thinking, oh, they're going to say this, and then I'm going to say this. Then they'll probably counter with this, but I'll be ready because I'll come back with this. And then I'll say this, and I'll say, oh, no, and just racing. My mind is racing. If you've ever sat at home waiting for an alcoholic to walk through that door, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I was at a level of fear that I have never known. And so I envisioned the third step in the pool rules and realized, as we understood him, meant that I could have a relationship with God that was personal to me. I could build my own God. It would be a best friend. It would be an entity that never judged me. And then most importantly, never leave my side. That I would always have God with me and that I'd be okay. And that blew my mind. That whole concept blew my mind. It never occurred to me that I could have a God that was so immense and so loving that I would be all right through anything. I'll fast forward and tell you I made it through that situation and I stayed in the Navy. I was in the Navy for 12 years. I ended up getting orders to San Jose, California. So if this had a soundtrack, you'd hear Dionne Warwick, Do You Know the Way to San Jose? I finally made it there. A great place to be in recovery. A great place to be in recovery. They welcomed me. I was part of the fellowship there. Some of you know me from other 12-step programs. I'll insert at this point. This is about where my recovery in other 12-step programs took off, but I'm here to talk about co-alcoholism, so I'm going to revert and stick back to that. So I'm in San Jose, and I'm doing the deal in Al-Anon, but I'm still dating alcoholics because I don't know how to not do that. So, I mean, I'm dating, practicing, using alcoholics. You know, I'm having epiphanies. Because now I'm in recovery, you know, I'm thinking, I don't think it's healthy to be trying to dig out of a snowbank that you just dove into because he's tried to run you down with the car. No, I don't think this is normal. And you know, the next night we're sitting having dinner and I'm thinking, how did this happen? Why am I here? He tried to run me over with the car yesterday. But all it took was an I'm sorry. That's it. That's all it took. And I thought about my mother and my stepdad and how angry I used to get because there was physical abuse in that relationship. And I was more mad at my mother than I was at him, that she would take it and then come back. Like, we had this, you know, event one night, and the next day, it's like, everything's okay, we're on this merry-go-round called denial, we're all good, you know, yes, there's a gray elephant, but we'll just paint the walls gray, and we'll do an African motif or something, you know what I'm saying? But I got to see very clearly that this is exactly how it's happened. I didn't know where else to go, I didn't know what else to do. So I was having this discussion with my sponsor, and he said, have you thought about dating anybody in that room across the way? And I was like, the AA meeting? Isn't that like shopping in the irregular section? I mean, it's like a big scratch and dent sale over there. I don't think so. And he said, you know, if you haven't paid attention to your track record, that's who you're dating now, but at least those people admit it, and they're trying to do something about it. You know, so I asked, went out on a date. He had 90 days, or almost 90 days. And so, you know, and the people in my home group were shocked. Like, oh my gosh, you're dating somebody with less than 90 days. What's wrong with you? And I went to my sponsor and I said, this is what's going on. And he said, well, let's look. Let's see what the book says. So he opened up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and went to page 68 and 69 and talked about, you know, we aren't the arbiter of other people's conduct. Advice is, you know, not wanted nor needed, essentially, paraphrasing. And so he said, so that means that there are going to be people that have a lot of opinions or ideas about what a relationship should look like. Most of them aren't in a relationship. I'm just telling you. So just ignore them and move on. And so, yes, I did mention the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you that at this point that I essentially only use three pieces of literature in the Al-Anon program. I use the Al-Anon 12 and 12, which is the green book, and I use Lois Remembers, and then I use the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll never forget the first time he pulled that book out, because I was like, I don't think that's our book. I'm not even sure it's conference-approved literature, and you're asking me to use that book. And he said, this is the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you want to know what makes an alcoholic tick, you have to read this book. It is the basis of the 12 steps of the Al-Anon family groups. The Al-Anon family groups is the name itself. Al-Anon is a derivative of Alcoholics Anonymous. When it was formed, you know, after 1935, when AA was formed, it was clear that alcoholism is a family disease, that everyone is affected, that alcoholism takes no prisoners, knows no bounds, doesn't care about your economic, social, ethnic, religious, gay, straight background. You're in it. You're along for the ride. And so, in order to avoid confusion, the original name was going to be called Alcoholics Anonymous Family Groups. They just shortened it to Al-Anon so that the alcoholics wouldn't be confused about which group they were supposed to be in. Or not. And he said, all 12-step programs, regardless of what they are, derive from this book. You're reading this book. And I'm so grateful I had a sponsor like that. Because there's been magical things that have been discovered every time I open up that book. And it is really where the answer lies. So in this particular situation, he'd referred to page 68, 69. We got into a relationship. It wasn't supposed to be a relationship. That's a whole other story. I'll tell you that for all the naysayers, that man and I celebrated 21 years last month. And gay relationship years are like dog years, so honey, that's a long time. And we had a wedding at some point here in Sacramento. Some of you in the room here attended that event, and it was the most wonderful day of my life. And I got to be the bride I always wanted to be. It was a wonderful, wonderful. There's family and friends here. I'll tell you that my mother is actually here today, Esther. She's in the second row. My sister, Rocky's here, and one of the best people of our wedding, Kelly is here. Art, who married us, is here. This is such a special experience for me to come home to Sacramento and have the opportunity to share this experience with you. It means the world to me. And before I say anything else, I'm going to tell you that. So, so a miracle has occurred during the time that I've been here in Al-Anon. I'm trying to be conscious of the time so I don't go over, but so my mother had a series of strokes, and so the doctor said that she had to stop drinking. And so she tried going to Alcoholics Anonymous and ended up choosing another spiritual path, which is fine, because in Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't profess to have the answer for everyone, and I was just glad she wasn't drinking. So and we were on a road trip to Turlock, I think, and attending my Aunt Sally's funeral. And she said, "I have something to tell you." This was about Lodi. And she started crying. And she said, "But I can't tell you now." I know, don't you hate that? But she has very little control over her emotions since her stroke. So she started crying, and then we get to Stockton, and she says, "Okay, I think I'm ready." "No, I'm not ready." And, so about the time we get to Modesto, she says, "Okay, I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was there for a little bit of time, and I learned about this thing called a nine-step amends." And she said, "And I believe I owe you one." She said, "I know that I was absent during my drinking, and that I really put a lot on you to raise your sister and your brothers. And if there was any way that I could go back and I could do that different, I would do it different, but I don't know how. So how would you like me to make restitution for that?" And then we were sitting and driving through Modesto, and I had my hands on the wheel, and I started to tear up, but then it just went away. And I turned to her and I said, "It's okay." And I realized in that moment that the miracle that is Al-Anon had occurred in my life. That from the time I used to have that conversation, I used to have that conversation all the time when I was growing up. You know, and in my version, you know, I exhaled on my cigarette, and I don't even smoke. Turned to her, and in my best Betty Davis said, "You're goddamn right, you're sorry." But from the time that I'd been rehearsing that to the time that we actually had the conversation, a miracle that is Al-Anon had occurred in my life, which is that I realized at that moment that all my experiences, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything that I've done has made me who I am today. And I like who I am. I didn't know that was going to happen. All the things that I have picked up along the way, all the experiences, good, the bad, the ugly, have served me, and they have served my fellow co-alcoholic. You know, the people come in the rooms of Al-Anon and they feel guilt, they feel shame, they feel despair. I relate to them. I relate to them. And I wouldn't relate if I'd had the perfect life. If I had the perfect life, I wouldn't need Al-Anon. If I'd had the perfect life, I never would have found God. If I'd had the perfect life, I never would have found you. All these components are the things that make my life today, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. So when I told her it was okay, I realized I meant it. So the next slide is what it's like now. Here's another Capitol dome. This one's in Texas. I live in the capital of Texas, Austin. It's a wonderful place. I went there for a conference and basically stayed. I just thought it was the most wonderful fellowship in the world and the most wonderful city, and they just embraced me, and I felt welcome there right away. And so I came back home to Sacramento, and I said, "We're moving to Texas." And Rob said, "Oh, my dead body. We are not living in Texas." But, you know, he said the same thing when we were in San Jose, and I said, "We should move to Sacramento." So I knew it didn't mean anything. So we did. We moved to Texas, and life is different. Life is very different. They do the program different there. But I've carried so much of you with me. You know, the folks that come to visit us, they're like, "Oh my God, this is exactly like the North Star meeting," or "This is exactly like the North Hall meeting." And it's because we've imported it from California. They didn't have a lot of the traditions and customs that they now have. And they're very grateful to have them. It's a way that you've been carried across the nation and you don't even know it. And it's a wonderful thing. I'm going to put my clicker down for this next one, because this next part is where I want to not... I'm having fun up here, and I hope that you're having fun, but I don't want this next part of my message to be construed in any way to be humorous, because it's not. Because the disease of alcoholism is serious, and it kills. It kills co-alcoholics, too. So Wednesday was my 26th birthday in Al-Anon, and on that day, my husband called me and said I needed to come home because we needed to have a conversation. So I did. I left work. I went home. And he told me that he was trading in his 21-year chip for a 24-hour one. And I didn't see that coming. Didn't see it. And that's all I'm going to say about it. Because in Al-Anon, we have a ninth tradition, which says that we need special care with the anonymity of Alcoholics Anonymous members. So many of you may know him from another program. That's his story. This is mine. We don't spend time in Al-Anon meetings, contrary to what some people think, talking about the alcoholic. When I go to the Al-Anon meeting, there is no room in my purse for your issues. I've got enough of my own. And so I left that meeting and I went to another meeting. I went to an Al-Anon meeting because this is my story and that's what I'm here to share with you today. I'm not here to share with anybody else's story. But if I don't carry any other message for you today, I want to let you know that in Al-Anon, in 12-step programs in general, but I'm talking about Al-Anon, we spend a lot of time talking about the importance of the newcomer. And that's true. They are the lifeblood of our program. They are the ones that remind us of what it was like so that we don't forget, so that we're constantly reminded. But I do want to remind you how important it is that we recognize the importance of the old timers. And because they may be having a bad day too. You know, I don't think to ask them. I figure they've got it by now, under control. No need to worry about them. This has given me a different and a new perspective. How important it is to have a continuous chain of sobriety, and how important it is to have the old timers on one end, and how it is important to have the newcomers on the other end, and how everybody in the middle is just as important. So that's where I'm at today with my Al-Anon program. This is a new development for me, and so I'm working with that. There's so many things that I wanted to share with you up here today. I'll tell you that life is not perfect. Yeah, certainly my relationship is not perfect. I don't know where we sometimes put that on people. I know that I felt at times that it has been put on me, like I'm some sort of power couple in recovery, that because we've got long-term sobriety and we've both been together for a long time and that's a rarity and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm learning what that is to let that go, because that's not the truth. I am who I am. And Rob and I, you know, we have arguments, you know, like anybody else. And, you know, I love it when he sometimes tries to wind down an argument or conclude it by saying, well, we just see things differently. And I love it when alcoholics understate things. It's like, because like, you just want to pinch their cheeks. It's like, yes, we do. You know, you know, there is a reason, you know. There is a reason that their book is called As Bill Sees It, and ours is Lois Remembers. Because, honey, she was there, and she wasn't in a blackout, okay? She was present. Yes, we see things differently. So I'm going to conclude today by showing you one last slide, okay? It's a mirror. And the thing about this mirror is that if we look in this mirror, we see two different things. If I look in this mirror, I see myself, which would be a gift that you have all given me. If you remember parts of my story, me telling you, I didn't care. Like, I didn't care if I lived or died. I just didn't care. And you have given me the ability to care about my own life. We have been given a primary purpose in the program of Al-Anon, which is to help the other families of alcoholics to recover. And what amazing purpose that is. How many people on this earth go from birth to death and never know what this exercise was about? And they talk about being given the keys to the kingdom. Here's the keys. We know why we're here. I know, and it's no secret. It's unfolded for us. It's clear. If I use that as a measure of my success, it really doesn't matter what's on my business card. It really doesn't matter what zip code I live in, and it really doesn't matter what kind of car I drive. If I'm ever eulogized, I doubt they'll mention any of those things anyway. It will be simply, how did he use the time that he was given? How many people did he impact? Whom did he try to help? Who did he touch? That's my primary purpose. That's what I get to measure my level of success on. And if I'm sticking to that, I'm probably going to be okay. Everything else is just short-term drama and, I don't know, jewels that we get along the way. But none of it really matters. The other thing that you see when you look in that mirror is all of you. You have been the biggest gift that I have been given, one that I wouldn't trade for anything. I'm so proud to tell people in Texas that I'm from California, that I'm from Sacramento, and that it is the best place on earth, that I love knowing that in my heart of hearts that U-Haul goes both ways, and that if anything ever got too bad there, that you all would just welcome me back. And it's that sense of security that knows, that tells me I'm going to be okay through anything. That I can go on and do other things, and I can pick up my program and take it with me wherever I go, but it doesn't matter because I'm going to be okay. So I'm going to wrap up by telling you that's how we manage to stay sane and serene one day at a time in the program of Al-Anon. Thanks.